All right, after a week off, we are back. I hope everyone had a lovely Thanksgiving break, ate a lot of food, watched a lot of football, and hopefully nobody else bet on the Ravens this Thanksgiving.
What did you bet on the Ravens, and why, actually?
See, that's a great question. So I made a bet with my dad, shout out dad. I unfortunately bet on the Ravens, and I got myself into running a 5K on New Year's Day. So,
What time is the 5K?
I think it's at like 8 a.m. or something. And there's a polar bear plunge afterwards, too. Cool.
Is that like one of those like holiday
like 5Ks? Yeah, it's like a New Year's Day special. For those of you who couldn't hear, Julian just asked if it was a holiday run. But yeah, my dad just thought that was the funniest thing. He was watching that game just laughing.
Well, you may regret placing your bet. I regret not placing a bet last night. Because on Kelce, you can bet on the mentions the commentators may say in a game. And there was stuff like concussion protocol, pylon, roughing the passer. It was all like 20% value on Kelce. And I was talking to MJ the other day, and I was like, surely this is being said. This is like free money for the taking. I didn't make the bets. What do you know? It's roughing the passer. CD gets a concussion, likely. There's pylon play, everything. So, yeah, I missed out on a lot of money. I could have been a millionaire last night.
So, to those of our listeners, hopefully, if y'all are having any sports betting, y'all are having better luck than we are over here in the studio.
Yeah, everyone remember, 99% of gamblers quit right before they win big.
Very true. Never Very quit. Very true.
All right. With that being said, let's roll the music, and then we're going to talk some ball. Alright, everybody, this is KTRU on 96.1, KTRU LP Houston, and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Good morning. You may be hearing a voice that you're unaccustomed to at the start of our shows. Sadly, I am not the Ian Kleppinger, as he is away on this fine Friday afternoon. Instead, I'm your replacement, Garrett Lowe, welcoming you back to another Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM. Yeah, sorry, Ian. The Rice University student-run radio show where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday at 7 a.m., although that may be subject to change next semester, right here on KTRU 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, make sure to follow us on both Instagram and TikTok. Our boy June is putting out some great content on the Insta right now, so stay tuned for more of that. We will be kicking off our hour with another Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, it is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So, to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both the city of Rice, or both the city of Houston and Rice University. And the first thing I want to talk about is your Houston Texans. When we talked last, the Texans were hot after a win against the Buffalo Bills, and they beat the Colts 20-16 in a huge game to put them only one game behind the AFC South Division lead and one game out of the wild card. This was huge. Now the Texans are on a four-game winning streak, which they'll carry this weekend into Kansas City. And I'm going to give a little shout-out to our boy Julian Puerto, who a month ago in our midseason Texans review said, "Every game is winnable. I don't think the AFC South is totally done." He said that when the Texans were like 3-5. Quite a shout, Juju. In other news, the hometown Rockets have gone 4-2 since our last recording, picking up a couple wins against the Suns, Jazz, Warriors, and Kings. And a big shout out to our king, Reed Shepherd, for dropping a career high 31 points in a win against Golden State. Big game for the young buck. Inside the hedges, Rice men's basketball unfortunately suffered back-to-back overtime losses, including a brutal 15-point drop to Florida Gulf Coast. That's a 15-point overtime loss in only a five-minute period. How we managed to do that is beyond me, but the Owls have bounced back since, picking up two straight wins against Oral Roberts and Texas State. And in our win against the Bobcats, true freshman and Jacob's good friend, Cam Carroll, dropped a cool 15 points on just 8 shots, moving the Owls to 4-6 on the season. We're going to be facing Arkansas State, the Red Wolves, on December 13th before a little Christmas break. The women's basketball team is on an absolute heater right now, going 4-1 in their last 5. In that streak, we saw a 75-72 overtime win against Illinois State, where Shelby Hayes dropped 23 points and 15 boards, helping her earn an honorable mention for American Conference Player of the Week. Big shout out to friend of the show, Shelby Hayes. Awesome performance. The Owls also picked up a 66-50 win against Sam Houston State, moving them to 6-3, second best record in the American Conference so far, although obviously it has no impact on the standings. And in the water, our Owl swimmers are on a heater, putting up a great performance at the Phil Hansel Invitational here in Houston. Ella Dyson and Ava Portello finished first and second, respectively, in the November 21st meet in the 1650 free. Portello also came in third in the 200 free and won the 500 free. Holy, she does it all. Portello won back-to-back American Conference Swimmer of the Week honors due to those performances. And in the diving category, Antonina Harned and Morgan Robeson both qualified for the NCAA Zone D meet, where they will have a chance to earn a spot at the NCAA Championship, which I believe is in March, but might need some fact-checking on that. And in volleyball news, your Owls are going to be playing Florida in just an hour after we finish recording this in the NCAA tournament. To give you a greater breakdown of that, I'm going to kick it off to my more knowledgeable counterpart, Rachel, to talk about your Owls volleyball.
All right. Thank you, Garrett. I'm here with David today. We are going to be talking some Rice volleyball. We got some really big stuff going on. We, like Garrett said, are playing Florida in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and that game will be starting in just an hour and a half. Let's talk some Rice volleyball. David, what do you got for me?
Yeah, so, well, before we get into our matchup with Florida, why don't we walk through just what happened this recent conference tournament? So what were your highlights from that tournament?
I mean, we were looking really good for the beginning of that tournament. You know, we had some really good wins. That Wichita State game, we looked great. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we did fall to Tulsa in the championship game, which cut our 17-game winning streak. You know, it killed that, which is unfortunate. However, not all is lost. Even though we did not win the American Conference tournament, because of our success, we were able to get an at-large bid for the NCAA tournament, which is great.
Yeah, this is Rice's 6th at-large bid for the NCAA tournament. And we just look very strong overall, even in our game against Tulsa, even though it was 3-1. That included a 68-point second set. We are very competitive with these higher talented teams, and we look poised to really be able to make some noise going into the tournament. And so, just can you talk more about some of the players on Florida that were going to stand out?
Yeah, so this game against Florida is going to be tough. I'm not going to lie. We are ultimately the higher seed. We're the 7th seed, and they are not seeded. However, I do believe that this game will be incredibly competitive and could very easily go one way or the other. Florida is a very talented team, and they have seen some really tough competition this season. Florida beat both Baylor and Tennessee, who are ranked talented teams, and they did lose to Kentucky, but they took them all the way to 5 sets, which many teams have not been able to do this year. We have a few standouts on Florida. We got Jordan Bird. She leads the team with 393 kills on the season, which is insane. That is insane to think about. She's a transfer from UT, so she played on UT's national championship team in 2023. She was named to the All-SEC second team. So Jordan Bird is definitely one to look out for. I think her and Taylor Preston can definitely, you know, kind of go head-to-head in that kill game. And then we also have Jayla August. She was named to the 2025 All-SEC first team, and she is also a middle blocker, so she's getting a lot of blocks, a lot of kills, really getting some action close up on that net. And then their main assister, their setter, is Alexis Stuckey, and she has 981 assists on the season, which wow, is insane. And she was also named to the 2025 All-SEC second team. So, you know, like I said, obviously we do have the higher seed in this game, but it could very, very easily go either way. Florida is very talented, and we're really going to have to bring our best effort and really lock in if we want to win this game against Florida.
Yeah, I mean, Florida has a lot of great players, but we also have our own Taylor Preston, like you just mentioned, and Arisa Smith, who were both named to the American All-Tournament team after our conference tournament. And so just in general, like, if we win this game, we will face the winner of SMU and Central Arkansas. So what's kind of the outlook for that game, and how far could we realistically go?
Yeah, that's a great question. We'll see the winner of SMU Central Arkansas. We have seen Central Arkansas before. We played them earlier in the season. We swept them. It was a pretty easy game for us. That being said, I seriously do not expect Central Arkansas to win this game. SMU is a phenomenal team. They are so talented. They have seen so much success this season. So I'm fully expecting SMU to win this game. And if we were to face SMU, do I think that we could play well against them? Absolutely. But that game would be very, very tough. Not to say that we can't do it, but we would definitely, that would be by far one of our toughest competitions of the season, besides maybe UT, who we played earlier this year. So obviously we want to get through Florida first before we can think about maybe seeing SMU, but I think we got some really tough competition ahead of us.
Yeah, and so to rein it back in on this Florida game, what do we feel like are going to be our biggest strengths and weaknesses going up against this team? How do we really match up with them on the court?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, they have a lot of talent in their middle blockers, those attackers that are close to the net. So I think, you know, just trying to get around that is going to be our biggest way to be successful. So, you know, we need to see our normal attackers. We have, like you said, Taylor Preston. We have Lademi Ogunlana and Kellen Doritic. Those are some of our really good attackers. They have, you know, just a great arm, all of them do. So they really need to step up. And because we have, you know, because we're going to be facing those talented attackers, our defense is going to have to be great. So Gabby Mansfield, she is always getting a lot of digs, a lot of defense. You know, we also got Darby Harris. We got Mari Foriyama. Those are some of our defensive specialists. I think they are going to have to definitely step up this game. If we want to, you know, be able to match up with Florida.
Yeah, we are still one of the top teams in digs per set, I believe. And so we have just overall been a pretty defensive-minded team with Coach Genny Volpe under the helm. And so, yeah, I think overall we should be pretty well set against Florida. And is there anything for next year that we should be looking out for?
I mean, yeah, next year we do have some seniors on our team, so our team is going to look a little different. Obviously, Taylor Preston is going to be a big one that's graduating. Lademi is also graduating. But we do have a lot of younger talent as well. Kaya Mateo, Savannah Scopel, they're both underclassmen. Mari Foriyama, she's a freshman, so we'll still be seeing her. Kellen Doritic is also an underclassman. So we do have a lot of returning talent. So I do think that we can continue this momentum into next season as well. And of course, we're going to be picking up some new members as well. So obviously, this season has been phenomenal. I'm so happy with this Rice women's volleyball team. And I mean, Genny Volpe, she knows what she's doing. I hope that she continues to, you know, do her thing. And I truly think that this season has been so successful, and hopefully we can you know, keep it going in the tournament, and I think that next season can be just as successful.
Yeah. Lots of exciting things to look forward to from our Rice women's volleyball team. And now coming up next, we have Julian and Andrew react to the World Cup draw live. And before that, a quick promo from Garrett.
Ever get sick of listening to men? 90.7% of Grammy nominees are men. In 2017, 86% of songs on the Billboard Hot 100 chart were by men. Babe Waves is a show that lifts up women, femme, and non-binary artists who don't get as much playtime as men. Babe Waves, 10 p.m., every Wednesday on K True. Tune in. Over to you, Julian and Andrew.
All right. Thank you, Garrett, for the promo. As we move into the biggest sporting event of the year, possibly in the history of sport, I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. First ever 48-team World Cup happening in the United States, Canada, and Mexico this summer, 2026. And so what me and Mr. Andrew Fox will be doing in like the next 10 to 15 minutes will be just blind reacting to the groups. The group draw for the tournament was held today. And so, yeah, ready? I haven't pulled it up just yet.
Okay. I'm going to open it up because I don't really know what Julian's doing. So they prepared a Google Doc for us. So it looks like Group A, we're seeing Mexico, South Africa, South Korea, and the winner of Playoff D.
For reference, I did include all the playoff possibilities right below.
Yes.
Yeah, so playoff D
is Denmark, North Macedonia, Czechia, and Republic of Ireland.
Czechia is crazy. It's anyway.
So I'm not going to lie. Looking at this, it's clear FIFA once again has come through with giving the hosts cupcake groups. This is going to be
Mexico
will
be
light work for Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico will be loving this group. South Korea should be...
I mean, South Korea are one of the weaker pot two teams. South Africa are arguably the weakest pot three team.
South Korea, yeah, but I would not underestimate them. They are always strong. Hyungmin Sun should still be playing at a decently high level for them, and they've got some players scattered around Europe. But honestly, in terms of winning this group and definitely like moving on to the next round, Mexico should be licking their lips at this group, to be honest, especially with the home field advantage they'll be getting at the Azteca and the other Mexican venues. I mean, Jacob, actually, as the Mexico fan of the podcast, how do you feel about the prospects of your team going forward?
I actually do love it. I know South Korea isn't going to be the easiest one. Obviously, there was other opportunities with Iran, which is would have been my preferred group of life. However, looking at South Africa as the starting match, I think if we take that one, we are sure to pass the group stage.
Yeah, I think moving on to group two, we have another host, Canada, the winner of playoff A, which is going to be Italy, Northern Ireland, Wales, or Bosnia, Qatar, and Switzerland. So obviously Qatar here going to be a non-factor.
Yeah, they will probably finish bottom of the group, 2 goals scored, 10 conceded or something like
that. Yeah, I would assume so. I think this is...
Sorry, Jassim Altani about that. Yeah.
This should be pretty simple for Switzerland. I think regardless of who qualifies from the playoffs in Path A, Switzerland is a level above every other team in this
group. We saw Switzerland actually, I think, face off against Italy in the Euros, I think in 2024, or that might have been the tournament before, and Switzerland handled them pretty easily. And that's assuming that Italy is the team that comes out of that Path A, but I agree with you, Fox, and that Switzerland should be the favorites to top that group, with Canada giving anybody that comes from Europe in that playoff a pretty good run for their money. I think Canada also, especially with the home field advantage, even though Canada not huge soccer culture, they'll be up for the challenge going into
the
summer.
Yeah, they'll like this group draw for sure.
Okay, group C then.
Brazil, Morocco, Haiti, and Scotland.
This is the passion merchant group, it looks like.
Unfortunately, Haiti, you're not scoring a single goal.
Haiti might get...
They're not sniffing the net.
They might be the worst team in the tournament, to be honest. Or not, like,
they're
going into it.
Yeah, they're definitely one of them. I had them as one of the weakest pot four teams, and they've been very unfortunate here to draw. Not only Brazil, obviously the most World Cup wins of all time, but also Morocco, who are arguably the strongest pot two team right now.
Yeah, and one of the most informed teams in the world, for sure. I mean, yeah, Brazil... Like, all you look at Brazil, Morocco, and Scotland, all three of these nations will bring, like, super strong supports from abroad. Scotland, while they probably don't love that they drew Morocco, will love the opportunity to maybe challenge for second place in this group. And so I think, it's an interesting one. And honestly, I know Morocco, people will be looking at Morocco to maybe top the group over Brazil as, like, a dark horse or, like, a hot take. It's interesting. I think Morocco have proven to be like giant killers in the last couple of tournaments, and they've got some good young players coming through. Wouldn't be surprised if we see Morocco topping the group over Brazil, especially with like the transition period that they're going through with Ancelotti and trying to fit in all the star players and what their best starting 11 is.
Yeah. Moving into Group D, the United States, obviously USA, Paraguay, Australia, and Playoff C. It seems we've made the call to FIFA. We might have the easiest group.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. This is a blessing.
Bro,
because
if the U.S. are not topping this group, there are issues.
Yeah, Australia is easily the weakest pot two team by a wide margin.
They're a pot two team?
They're pot two. Paraguay are a middle of the pack pot three team.
And we just beat them in a friendly too.
Yeah, and then looking at playoff C, Turkey, Romania, Slovakia, and Kosovo, like,
that is, and that's like the weakest one.
Yeah, if Turkey comes through there, that might be a bit of an issue, but realistically, the USA should be getting,
and yeah,
arguably 7 points out of this group.
And honestly, I'm looking at path C and thinking Turkey will probably be the team that comes out anyway, so I'm just going to go ahead and call that US, Paraguay, Australia, and Turkey. Turkey will make it tough. I think for any like strong American like fans out there, I would caution against getting too excited about topping the group. I think Turkey, while they have been candidates for like dark horsedom in past tournaments and like failed to do so, they have a good result in them occasionally with Arda Güler, Kenan Yildiz. They will have players who are up for the challenge. And again, another team that will bring fans from across the pond and will really like get behind their team. So, but no, if the US don't make it as a top two team out of this group, then it's a catastrophe. So for those around the table, you can be confident about the US getting some good results, at least in the early part of the tournament. That'll be good for momentum and getting the country to get behind the team. So, yeah.
And one thing I want to note is the USA did lose 2-1 to Turkey in a friendly this past summer. So that's just something to look out for. But moving into group E, Germany, Curaçao, Ivory Coast, and Ecuador. I think this is actually a pretty interesting group. It's unfortunate for Curaçao to make it to their first World Cup and kind of come up against, like, for them, arguably group of death. Ecuador are one of the strongest, like, most informed teams in the entire world right now.
They overrated, lost, but yeah, yes.
I don't know. They only lost 2 games in qualifying. They only conceded 5 goals in 18 games.
Ecuador,
they're rock solid at the back.
Ecuador are the team that, like, the analytics guys love to, like, predict as like the surprise team, and then like they end up doing nothing at the World Cup. But
Julian's salty because Ecuador finished ahead of Colombia in qualifying.
I really couldn't care less.
I have to jet back up Julian. Looking back at the Copa America, and even though they did end up grouping Mexico, it was definitely a draw, you know, and against a Mexico's team with
that was not very strong
offense.
At the
exactly.
time. Yeah, and I look at Ecuador. They're one of those teams that you don't want to face if you're a big team because they don't concede a lot of goals.
Yeah.
But they also can't score a lot. And you look at their roster and a lot of their best players are further along in the back, like Caicedo, Incapié. You look at some of these guys. They do have Kendry Páez, right, up top, but he's like a little younger. I actually don't hate this group for Curaçao, for example. Like, especially if they can get a result out of that Ivory Coast game.
I disagree. I think Ivory Coast, in qualifying, they were 8-2-0. They're one of three teams that did not concede a goal in World Cup qualifying. I think this is no longer like, because obviously, like 2014, we saw them with like Yaya Toure, and then they kind of fell off a cliff.
This is not the Wilfred Zaha led Ivory Coast.
This is not Wilfred Zaha Ivory Coast. This is a different team that maybe like the star power isn't quite as present, but I think it's a much better overall squad.
That's fair enough. All I'm saying, and I probably would have them finishing last, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're able to get a result out of this. So.
Moving
into interesting group
F, we have the Netherlands, Japan, the winner of playoff B, which is going to be Ukraine, Sweden, Poland, and Albania.
Probably Poland or Ukraine.
Yeah, and then
that,
Tunisia. I think this is a really tough group. I think Japan's a really good team for pot two. Tunisia's also a really good team coming from Africa.
Yeah,
so.
They talk about, you know, people talk about, you know, the group of death at the World Cup. I see this as one of those groups of life where, like, the Netherlands should be the heavy favorites to come top. But any of those three teams, like after them, I think could play second. Tunisia have been one of the strongest, like you said, African teams in the past like decade. Japan always a strong Asian team, so I'd like any of those teams to finish second. Very competitive.
So looking at Group G, we have Belgium, Egypt, Iran, and New Zealand. This is a pretty straightforward group for Belgium, you'd think.
Yeah, Belgium, even though they're like in the tail end of their golden generation, you know, some of their older players are getting up there, but yeah, to be honest, I have no strong feelings about this group. I think Egypt would be my favorite right now to play second, but Iran will make it tough. But they won't have fans at the World Cup due to, like, international, like, travel policy. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. Hey, it's a thing you have to talk about. It'll be them and Haiti who don't have fans at the World Cup, unfortunately. So we'll see if that ends up playing a part in their results.
So now moving into Group F, Spain, Cape Verde, Saudi Arabia, and Uruguay. This is a tough group for Cape Verde. I kind of feel bad for them because they had such like a...
Yeah.
Like it was really a great story to see them make it to this World Cup, but this is a pretty rough group to draw in your first go. I think Spain, obviously one of the favorites for the tournament. Uruguay are always a very tough game in any competition.
Yeah.
And then Saudi Arabia, maybe not like a premier team, but they're definitely not like an easy victory either.
I'll be honest, it'll be Spain and Uruguay from this group, and then this will be one of those groups that does not have a third-place team make it through. I just don't see where the other two get the points against Spain and Uruguay, to be honest. I think it's pretty straightforward, this one.
So now Group I, this is kind of looking like a potential group of death to
look
me.
At that.
France, Senegal, the winner of playoff two.
Which is going to be Bolivia, Suriname, or Iraq.
Okay. Yeah.
And so maybe a weak team there. Yeah. And then Norway. So this is
That's
France,
tough.
One of the best teams in the world. Norway, the clear best pot three team, and Senegal, who are a very solid pot two team.
Yeah. Hear me out. There might be one of these good teams in this group that ends up not making it to the knockout stages, not because they're not good enough, but because the competition is so tough, they might end up getting more draws than wins. So, like, I could see a world where, like, Norway draws against Senegal and even, and then lose to France, and then maybe, like, a win against whoever that fourth team is, and then not be able to make it through because, like, you know, they maybe, like, on goal difference don't get enough goals or something. But I think if there's a lot of draws in this group, a very talented team could end up getting grouped. But definitely the spiciest group we've seen so far. There's a lot of quality just across the board here. So, that yeah, a very good one.
100%. So now Group J, Argentina, the reigning champions with Algeria, Austria, and Jordan.
I swear these guys keep getting the easiest group every single year, man. Like, what is this?
Yeah, this should be very simple for Argentina.
Yeah.
None of these teams are really on their level. You'd expect Austria to come through second.
I'm not sure. Them and
Algeria
will keep it.
Really great. And then Jordan, kind of just happy to be here, it kind of feels like.
Yeah, don't sleep on Algeria. They have some nice talent coming through ever since the... Ever since the 2010-2014 squads. I think Mahrez is still kicking about with them, even if he's up there in age. But it should be a cakewalk for Argentina, let's be real. And then, yeah, pretty open for that second spot.
So now two groups left. Group K, Portugal, playoff one, who is going to be New Caledonia, Jamaica, or the DRC. And then Colombia and Uzbekistan. This is another group of death type situation, I think.
So I'm repping the Colombia colors today to represent my primary country, if you want to call it that. This is an interesting group for sure. Portugal will be looked as the favorites just because of all the talent they have, but I will say, as someone who loves Portugal as a Ronaldo guy as well, if Ronaldo is gonna be part of the starting 11, I would not be surprised to see Colombia finish top, just because they are one of the more organized teams in the competition and have proven in the Copa America and in friendlies that they have the ability to beat anybody with their star players and just like defensive structure. And that Portugal team, when Ronaldo plays, I feel like their big problem is that they don't really have an identity. So that match will be super interesting and one that tests my loyalties for sure. And then Uzbekistan, as we were talking before the show, is no slouch. I think if the DRC, the Congo, come through that playoff, I think they're probably favorites to make it third. But Uzbekistan will make it tough. So yeah. Another interesting group. I think this is my favorite one so far, not just because of Colombia, though. I think it's a pretty interesting one.
So now our final group, England, Croatia, Ghana, and Panama. England obviously going to be the heavy favorites here, but Croatia, another elite pot two team, making this really quite difficult for Ghana and Panama to kind of envision a way to get out of this group.
Yeah, it feels like the thousandth time that England and Croatia will be facing each other in an international tournament.
Yeah.
England to have their number, it seems like. This should be a cakewalk for England with Thomas Tuchel. He'll have those boys drilled. I'm sure we'll have more World Cup talk as the year goes on, but England, as of right now, are my favorites for the tournament above Spain and France, actually. We can get into that analysis some other time. But yeah, this should be England and Croatia. Ghana have a good squad with some good players there. Panama, sorry, likely won't be doing much. But yeah, another interesting group. Interesting, man. So do we have any closing thoughts for like the group stage? Anything that catches your eye or takeaways that we can look ahead towards 2026, even though it's early still.
I think, again, very fortunate for all of the host countries in their draws. They'll be excited about that.
Yeah, for sure.
And then a couple of definitely group of deaths looks out for. But that kind of concludes our analysis, our blind reaction to the World Cup groups. I'm going to pass it over to Garrett for a quick promo.
Thanks, Andrew. Treasures of the 60s, every Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on K-True 96.1 FM. Undiscovered gems and re-examined jewels from the grooviest decade of them all get unearthed every week for your listening pleasure. Can you dig it? Over to you, Jacob.
All righty. As the college football season has come to an end, we are now left with a weekend full of conference championships. One of the first ones we will go over, the one playing tonight, Tulane versus North Texas. What do we think of that game, boys?
I'll start us off. I really like the Mean Green. I'm from Dallas, so it's a family school. It's really cool to see them in the spotlight. Drew Messemaker is obviously a phenomenal quarterback for them. It's going to be interesting. It's in New Orleans at Tulane. I think it'll be a shootout, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm a little biased. I like the story of North Texas a lot. I'm pulling for them, but Tulane's always pretty formidable. They've been ranked or borderline ranked the past few years. Winner very likely represents the American in the playoffs, so it's going to be a really interesting matchup.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic, too, because both their coaches have agreed, the coach of North Texas, Eric Morris, and the coach of Tulane, John Sumrall, have both agreed to take different coaching jobs already. They're going to still coach their team for the rest of the season, but they've already agreed to leave. I think that's an interesting dynamic, and Tulane has already beat two Power 5 teams this year, including ACC championship participant Duke. So I think they have a strong resume, and if I had to choose right now, I think I'd go Tulane.
Yeah, the only time UNT played a ranked team, they lost by 27. They're still favored by 2.5 in New Orleans tonight. So I think Tulane on paper looks better, but I like the story.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Tulane, I'm not sure if Duke is the greatest resume booster. That's a team with 5 losses, and we'll get into their matchup with Virginia very soon. Matter of fact, we can go into that right now. I think Virginia really should handle them. They've already beaten them earlier this year. And if Virginia wins, they're basically a slot in for the college football playoff. But if Duke wins, and we'll talk about this in a little bit as well, there's going to be some pretty interesting shakeups in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, though, does anyone think these two teams, like, should be here? Like, I get Virginia finished top of the conference, and they're going to be in the playoff. But, like, no matter who they play, they're gonna be the 11 seed. They're going to play, like, the 5 or 6, which is like Ole Miss or something. They're going to get blown out because they've been barely beating teams all year, and then Duke has 5 losses. And I think it's just kind of sad for the ACC, honestly, this is how their championship game looks right now.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the love-hate relationship that I have with the playoff. I think you get to see the small teams like UNT make it in there, but then you see Duke and Virginia when you have Miami and Notre Dame and big-name schools like that that are vying for a position. When in your ACC championship, again, you have Duke and Virginia playing.
Certainly. Let's move on now to the BYU versus Texas Tech matchup.
Yeah, I really like Tech here. I think Jacob Rodriguez should be a Heisman candidate, at least get a little bit of love there. Tech handled BYU pretty well a few weeks back. I think they're going to do so again. And if BYU does lose, there's some pretty interesting implications for potential seeding as well.
Yeah, I think, again, BYU doesn't stand a chance. The way they played against Tech in Lubbock, it was just terrible. Tech looked really, really good. They shut them down. Their offense looked really good. Like you mentioned, Rodriguez, he's got 7 forced fumbles and 4 interceptions this season. Tech is favored by 12.5 in Dallas, Jerry World. Obviously, you're going to have a plethora of Tech fans. Also, there's a lot of Mormons in Dallas, so hopefully you should have a good showing from both sides.
Yeah, I mean, not to beat a dead horse here, but Texas Tech, like, other than their one loss to Arizona State, which is Arizona State's still, but that's kind of inexplicable, they've just dominated the Big 12. Like, they blew out at number 16 Utah by 24. They blew out number 7 BYU, and they blew out every other team they played. So I think Texas Tech is a big favorite here.
Yeah, certainly. Moving on now to Alabama versus Georgia.
I like the Bulldogs here. I think if Alabama does lose, I really don't see the committee punishing them too hard for making the SEC championship and then losing to a number
depends
three
how
seed.
By how much they lose by, I think.
I agree, but to a number three seed Georgia team that when you look at the top four teams here, you look at Indiana, Ohio State, Georgia, and Texas Tech. These are like the four dominant teams in the league right now, and everyone else is kind of vying for those 5 through 12 spots. I do see Georgia taking this game pretty handily. Alabama does have a chance. They're still a very good team. Ty Simpson's still doing his thing, except for that Oklahoma game, which I know Jackson has some thoughts about.
Yep.
But, yeah, it'll definitely be an interesting matchup, but I do have Georgia taking it.
Yeah, Alabama already won at Georgia this year, actually, but that was, like, week 4, so it was a long time ago. So it's interesting to see how dynamics have changed. But it seems like in these, like, big games, like, whether it's, like, the playoff back in the four-team era or the conference championship, Alabama kind of owns Georgia, to be honest. So I'd be interested to see if that continues with Kalen DeBoer there now, obviously, instead of Nick Saban.
Yeah, that's I love that narrative, by the way, that Kirby Smart can't beat Alabama. I think it's going to trap a lot of people. I think Georgia comes out on top today, but just to give some context to that, he's 1-7 against the Tide. He has an 85% career win rate with Georgia, but against Bama, it's 14%. Bama scores 31.6 points against Georgia. Georgia's points per game drops 8.8. They have 3 SEC championship defeats, but they came up big in 1 national championship win. I think he comes up again in the SEC championship. It's in Atlanta, so I think they're going to have a strong showing there. Give me Georgia.
Yeah, I like Kirby Smart beating the narrative. Ryan Day also beat his narrative against Michigan not too long ago in a handily win over Michigan. That leads us into OSU versus Indiana in the Big Ten championship, and I think OSU is really going to take it. Indiana is very, very talented. Fernando Mendoza is the Heisman favorite. I still think it should go to Sain, by the way. But
I agree.
When you look at Indiana's performance against Penn State not too long ago, it's pretty shaky in a way that OSU, besides the first quarter against Michigan, hasn't looked all year. They've been dominating pretty much every single time, so I have OSU.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say about this, to be honest, because Indiana and Ohio State, neither of them have played like a murderous row schedule, but they've both been the two best teams this year. But I think, again, if you look at like just like talent of roster, Ohio State's is just so far above Indiana. And I think Indiana had a great season, but I think they're going to take a loss here to Ohio State.
I think so, too. I think everybody and their mother is singing to Ohio State. They're on a 16-game win streak. Both teams are have the highest win streaks in college football right now. Again, I like Julian saying for the Heisman. I think it's going to be OSU. And I think if it's a close game, I think they still end up getting first-round bias, both of them.
Yeah, so moving on to now different playoff scenarios. So we just went over potentially where Indiana could still secure the 2 seed even if they do end up losing to Ohio State. Now let's say hypothetically Duke wins the ACC championship. Do we see them even making the college football playoff? If not, who should be going in for them?
I think that if Duke wins the ACC, we definitely see the winner of Tulane or North Texas, so whatever one of those two teams get in. And then if JMU wins, I think they do have a shot to get that other spot. But if they lose, I think what the committee should go to is Miami. But I don't know what you guys think about that, Seth.
Yeah, I think it's going to be James Madison if they win. The one thing that I don't know is, like, if it's tied to, like, another conference winner, which I think it might be, it would be, like, at that point, it gets bleak. You're looking at either putting in the 5-loss Duke or going to the Mountain West with, like, UNLV or Kennesaw State. And this is, I think that kind of just shows, like, the problems with the current playoff structure. But, yeah, I think it's going to be James Madison if Duke loses and they win.
Yeah, I think all I pretty much read up on it is if Duke wins and JMU beats Troy, they're likely getting the CFP. I'm cheering for Virginia, hopefully to see them get up there. I think Duke is not really a good team, and they really don't deserve it, even though if they end up winning the ACC, even still, I think it's kind of just a formality to get them into the playoff.
Yeah, I don't really see them beating Virginia, but if it does happen, it's obviously a possibility, and if it does happen, there's...
Spread's only 3.5, so...
Yeah, I mean, Virginia had a really resounding win over Florida State, albeit Florida State hasn't been very good recently. But, I mean, it was an electric game. The fans rushed the field the second the ball hit the ground. So They've had some high moments, and I think they are probably going to take the ACC, but it's interesting to see what happens if Duke does win.
Yeah, Virginia already won at Duke this year, too, by the way, and that was like 2 weeks ago, so pretty recent matchup.
Now let's transition on to potentially the bubble, where we have Alabama, Miami, BYU, and Notre Dame. So let's go a little bit over the strength of record rankings. What do we think about the potential for BYU to still make it if they lose? Should Alabama make it regardless of a loss just because they made it to the championship? Because three losses obviously doesn't look good. BYU would only have two losses, but then again in a weaker conference. So what do we think of all this?
If BYU loses to Tech again, and I think if they get blown out again, the spread's 12.5, they got to skedaddle out of that playoff. Yep. Because 11-2, that's a pretty record. But again, I mean, I think it's weak compared to the other teams being considered.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Alabama, though, I think this is where things can get a little bit subjective, because when you have a track record of playing Georgia twice in a year, when you have games against OU as well as a lot of other very strong teams, it just really depends on the closeness and the outcome of the SEC championship, in my opinion, to see whether or not Alabama drops and by how much, and whether or not they can slide a team like Miami up or Notre Dame or even BYU if the outcome's close enough. But I also agree. I don't really think they should get too much of a look if Tech pulls it out, which I think they should.
Yeah. I mean, looking back last year with SMU, where they lost in the ACC title and still made the playoffs, so certainly we had to consider that scenario. So I think personally for me, and I speak on perhaps most of the listeners, where we would probably want to see Alabama in the CFP regardless of the outcome.
Yeah, I think another interesting thing is last week the committee moved Alabama above Notre Dame after their resounding win over 5-7 Auburn. But I think that's just kind of like insurance in case Alabama does lose. They still want to put them in like they put SMU in last year and keep them in over Notre Dame. I think the most interesting thing is if BYU wins, I think Notre Dame is out. And if BYU loses, I think Notre Dame is in. I think that's where the bubble is. And then Miami, I think Miami's out at this point. So I think that's the way the bubble's looking right now.
Yeah, I have Notre Dame over Miami as well, even though Miami did beat Notre Dame. It was first game of the season on the road in Miami with a freshman quarterback. And it was only by a field goal. And Miami took losses both to SMU and Louisville. Not to say that they're necessarily bad teams, but it's not like they're top of the pack either.
Yeah, I mean, a BYU loss could flip things regarding Notre Dame and Miami, but I do see Notre Dame also getting in. And if they do match up with Texas A&M, a team which they lost to earlier this year, but it was a very close game, and an A&M team that has been pretty fraudulent all year, with that obviously being shown against UT just this past week. I think Notre Dame, and then a potential matchup against Indiana as the 2 seed in the next round, an Indiana team that I don't think is super, super, super dominant, mm-hmm. even with Mendoza as the Heisman favorite. I think Notre Dame has the potential to get back to the semifinals and possibly the national championship, depending on how matchups shake up.
I think since we still have a little bit more time, let's look at the scenarios where right now the current 1-4 is Ohio State, Indiana, Georgia, then Texas Tech. So let's say hypothetically Georgia or Texas Tech lose, who would you choose to go in those slots?
Oregon, I'd put up there, because it's either going to be like Oregon, Ole Miss, or Texas A&M. Those are the other one-loss teams that aren't playing this week in the conference championship. And Ole Miss, they just lost their head coach. I don't know how much you punish them for that, but I don't necessarily want to give them a bye after that. And then Texas A&M, as MJ mentioned, are frauds, so I wouldn't put them there either.
So certainly you wouldn't move Alabama all the way up here if they do end up beating Georgia, no matter by the margin.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. I think I put Alabama in there, because Alabama's strength of schedule this year is crazy. Like they beat Vanderbilt, they beat Georgia twice at this point. So yeah, I think I put Alabama up there.
Yeah, how about the Sooners? Not to be top four, but 3 weeks ago going to that Alabama game, I said maybe they're a dark horse for the playoff. Everybody laughed at me, thought I was so stupid. And look at them now. Look at the Sooners. Let's get a little boomer in here.
Speaking of the Red River, though, you think there's any potential chance for Texas to sneak in?
I was thinking possibly. That, too. I forgot. I love how irrelevant they become, almost, kind of. There you go. Good freak.
Yeah, might as well. If we're talking about Texas, might as well put USC in the conversation. I think that's enough to close up the conversation. I will pass it on to myself to get into our quick hits now. So, moving on to quick hits. The Texans have just beat the Colts in a huge AFC South matchup. Now we look forward to Arrowhead Stadium, and here is a haiku to hype up my Texans fans. Shout out, Julian. Name is D'Amico. Defense wins championships. Lead us past the Chiefs. That'll be it. Short and sweet.
All right, and I'm here to talk a little more, talk a little more college football. So, as I just mentioned, Ole Miss, they're 11-1, and they did just lose their head coach. But just for a little bit of context, Ole Miss, they did, I just mentioned this, they went 11-1 this year. They barely missed the SEC championship game, and they're prepping to be in the playoff. They're going to be like that sixth seed probably, which is a pretty good spot to be in. And this is their best season since the 1960s. I think it was 1962 is the last time they've been this good. So this is just like a once-in-a-lifetime type of performance from them, this year. And essentially their coach, Lane Kiffin, he turned this program around, right? So before he got there, they were consistently 6-6, 5-7, 4-8. And now they made it to a New Year's Six Bowl a couple years ago, and now they're competing for a national championship. And so essentially this is the perfect situation for a head coach. This is what you want to be in. You want to be coaching an SEC powerhouse with essentially no chance of getting fired and no hot seat at all. But yet, despite this, during the season, rumors started to swirl. So both the LSU and Florida jobs were open. Respectively, Brian Kelly and Billy Napier got fired, and Kiffin's name was in talks anyway. So, but this doesn't make any sense, because why would he leave a team that might win a national championship in the middle of the season? And yet, his family, it was seen touring LSU's campus during the season, which is just kind of like a weird thing to be doing. And then after Ole Miss's final regular season game, Lane Kiffin makes a decision. He signs a 7-year, $91 million contract to be the new head coach at rival LSU. So Ole Miss is coachless. He signed the Supermax. And now he left this team that's going to be in the playoff to just for the money and just for the fact that even though Ole Miss is an SEC program like LSU, LSU has a much better facilities. They have a much better history. That's part of the reason why he left. But just to make this whole situation even weirder is it's a whole spectacle type of thing, because in the weeks leading up to this, the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, shout out, was criticizing LSU for paying a $54 million buyout to fire their previous coach, Brian Kelly. But then he turns around and he lauds this massive deal for Lane Kiffin, $91 million. So that just doesn't really make any sense. And then he is quoted as saying, hiring the football coach at LSU is the biggest thing in the state of Louisiana, which for a governor to say is just crazy. Like, I mean, Louisiana as a state, right, ranks towards the bottom of many things. Maybe we should try and, like, help out our people a little bit. I don't know. Instead of just worrying about a football coach. But I don't know. He's a governor, not me. But so then Lane Kiffin, and then another thing that happened was Lane Kiffin was going to his private plane to fly from Mississippi to Baton Rouge, and then Ole Miss fans line up and start booing him as him and his offensive staff get on the plane. It's just a whole ridiculous situation, and they're right to be mad, because Ole Miss fans are now going to the playoff. They don't have a head coach, and they don't really have any direction. And one former player said about the situation, he said, Lane's taking it from us. He made it all about him. I think he wakes up every morning, looks at himself in the mirror, and tells himself he loves him. I think that's who he cares about most. I think he cares about himself more than anything on this earth, including his family. Now, that's crazy, but I think it's kind of true, because to leave Ole Miss right now is just like the worst possible time, and he leaves them completely stuck. And I think this is kind of just like emblematic to a greater problem in college football, because what Lane did is unprecedented. He left one SEC program for another while they still have a shot to win the national title. But this is like a problem among all sectors of college football. So Eric, I mentioned this again in the college football segment, but Eric Morris at North Texas, John Sumrall at Tulane, and Bob Chesney at James Madison are the head coaches of those schools, and they all still have a shot at the national title. But all three of them took the jobs at Oklahoma State, Florida, and UCLA respectively. So they've already left their schools, even though those schools still technically have a shot at the national title. So I think just the calendar in itself is just fundamentally messed up, and something needs to be changed to prevent not only the Kiffin stuff from happening, but the stuff at the Group of Five level and even the FCS level from happening, where these coaches are leaving their teams before the end of the season. Because, like, I don't know, imagine Dan Campbell leaving the Lions before the playoffs. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So with that out of the way, let's get some predictions up, and let's start with the SEC championship, as we mentioned in the college football segment, Alabama versus Georgia. I have Alabama in that game.
Give me the dogs.
Per usual, I am rocking with Max's mom. Give me the dogs.
I'll take Georgia.
Respectfully, I'll take Georgia.
You know, I'll rock with Max's mom too. Give me Georgia.
I will also rock with Max's mom.
I'm not rocking with Max's mom. Sorry, I'm rocking with Seth. I'll take Bama.
I will not rock with Max's mom. But I will still take Georgia.
All right. Next up, we have the American Conference Championship game: North Texas versus Tulane. I have Tulane.
I'll take UNT.
Drew Messemaker's bringing the Natty to Denton, Texas. Go Mean Green.
Let's go Mean Great.
Give me UNT.
Give me the Mean Green.
Denton, Texas might have the best Waffle House in the nation, and they're going to win this game.
I will also be going UNT.
Yeah, give me the Mean Green.
All right, and then in the NFL this week, we have Chiefs versus Texans on Sunday Night Football, and I have the Chiefs in this game.
Look, I love my Texans, and it's been a great ride, but until I see us beat Kansas City in Kansas City, I won't believe it. Last time that happened, a certain Cleveland Browns quarterback was playing for our team. So just to paint the picture for y'all.
Take the Cowboys' little brother, the Texans.
Yeah, Julian had to go Chiefs just because of how bad of his prediction record is. Give me Jackson Mahomes and the Chiefs to win in Arrowhead.
As much as I would love to see the Chiefs with the losing record, I don't see it happening. Give me the Chiefs.
I will be taking the Texans.
Give me the Chiefs.
Chiefs at home all day.
Give me the Texans.
And lastly here this week, we have an underdog pick. These must be at least plus 200 money line and count for more wins on your record if you get it right. So this week I have the Trailblazers over the Pistons because the Blazers already beat the Thunder and they are giant killers.
Yeah, reminder that if we get these wrong, they do not count against our record. I will be taking Bengals over the Bills. I love me some Joe Burrow, and they will be motivated to go on a win streak to see if they can maybe take that awful AFC North.
Give me the Bears over the Packers at Lambeau.
Give me the Notre Dame Fighting Irish over the TCU Horned Frogs.
I like the Bears to take the number one NFC seed.
Give me the Mavs or the Thunder. We're going to win it, baby.
Yeah, that's a great lock, David. Y'all were hating on the Mormons in that college football segment. I'm going to ride with them. Give me BYU over Texas Tech.
I will venture into soccer and take Girona over Elche.
So I learned my lesson to not bet on the Ravens, so I'm going to be taking the Steelers over the Ravens this Sunday.
All right, and with that, the show is done, and we will be off next week and for a couple weeks after because it is winter break. If you miss us in the meantime, go back and stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at KTRU.sports on Instagram to make sure you don't miss anything happening on Against the Grain. We will see you actually, our times are going to be different next semester, so we'll see you sometime, someday, right here on KTRU 96.1 FM. Until then, see you next year.
Nice.